yesterday I started off with a question. I'll ask it again. Who's the most important person here?
Me.
And who's the best?
Me.
And who is unstoppable? You are, right?
Yes.
Today we're going to have a great day. Now I asked you another question which is important as well. And the question is, how can you tell who a person really is? By what they do. There's a book on the bookstands right now called The Zone. Has anybody read The Zone? It's on how to eat. It's very hard to follow it, but it's a very interesting book, right? However, there's one point in The Zone which I thought was very interesting. It says that even if you eat out of the zone, in other words, you eat foods that are not great for you, you're only one meal away from the zone. In other words, if you eat chocolate cake and junk food and Cokes and everything else, which is out of the zone, the high performance zone, then don't feel bad about it. Don't beat yourself up on it. Just the next meal, start eating the right foods and you're back in the zone. Now, that's the interesting thing about us too, because you can make all kinds of mistakes and do all kinds of dumb things and you can get mad and angry and upset and you can go off in all directions at once. But at any given time, at any given moment, you can move into peak performance. You can step back in the zone by the thoughts, words, and behaviors that moment, at any given time. Now, if a person does the things that a leader does, as of this moment, what does that mean? It means that that person is a leader. Even if the person has not done these things before, the minute they step into the zone, they are, because you are what you do. And if you do something different this minute from what you did last minute, you are a new person now. And the only question, and Barry Sears talks about it, is how long do you stay in the zone? Did anybody see that movie with Michelle Pfeiffer called Dangerous Minds? There's a very interesting part of that, and we teach it in accelerated learning, where many, many teachers are starting to use this in schools now. It's a very powerful principle. She starts off and she says, everybody here has an A. All that you can do in this school semester is lose your A. You start off with an A. Now, all you have to do to keep it is to continue to do A work. If you continue to do A work, you keep your A. And my job, and this is what we teach teachers, is we say, you start off everyone with an A. Everyone has an A, you put it up on the board. Now, for the rest of this semester, we're going to work together. And we are going to work on making sure that all you do is A work. And if you hand in something that it's not A work, we're going to hand it back and we're going to continue to work on it until it is A work. And I'm going to pass out samples throughout the year of what A work looks like. And when somebody else gets an A, we'll circulate it. And the people who get A's will work with the people who don't get A's so that everybody gets A's. But by gum, by the end of this year, everybody's going to have their A intact, right? Now, that is a very powerful thing because you'll find that people will make a certain effort to get something they don't have, but they'll kill to keep something they've already got. And so you all have A's. You all are A students, right?
Yes.
So all you can do to lose your A is do non-A work. And if you do the things that we talked about yesterday, and especially the things we talked about today, if you just do those systematically, you keep your A. You stay in the maximum performance zone. You stay in the top 10%. And all you have to do is, if you fall out of the top 10%, is you're only one action away from getting back in to the zone. Are you with me so far? And so today I'm going to give you some tools, and they're going to be very good tools, and we're going to break up the day as we broke it up yesterday, and then we're going to start talking about my favorite subject of all, which is goals. And we're going to talk a lot about goals for the rest of this morning. My goal for us is that a week, a month, a year from now, you look back and you say, that was the day that turned my life around. That was the turning point in my life. I am where I am and what I am today as a result of what we talked about in that seminar. My goal is not just to entertain. My goal is to bring about long-lasting, permanent, deeply entrenched benefits, and also to give you the tools so forever after you can do it yourself. You can take this workbook, you can teach with it, you can train with it, you can repeat it, you can review it, you can use it again. You'll have the tools that have taken me 25, 30 years to develop, and they're all there at your fingertips. You don't have to spend the hundreds and thousands of hours of reading and research and experience and bleeding and pain. You can just pick it up, start anywhere, and get back in the zone. Get back into A work. Get back into the top 10%. Remember, you're in the top 10% now because you're here. You can only get out of the top 10% by doing non-top 10% stuff, right? Okay, let us begin. One of the most important of all subjects today, and there's a good deal of research that's been done on it over the years, we talk about the leader. There was a lot of controversy after World War II, and a lot of people are very uncomfortable about the idea of a leader. Today, however, the world is shifting, and we realize that everything is leadership. Everything is leadership. Is that today we have a dearth of leadership. We have the biggest, most powerful, most wonderful country in the entire world. Where are the leaders? Where are the men and women of honor and integrity and character and boldness and vision? Where are the men of intelligence and goodness who can inspire us and uplift us to great things? We don't have very many leaders. We have a lot of politicians, but we don't have very many leaders. There's an old saying that the politician is the person who thinks about the next election. The statesman is the person who thinks about the next generation. And I think we have too many politicians and not enough statesmen, because very few people think beyond fundraising for the next election. So, your job and my job is to realize that leadership is not something that is conferred upon people who lead mighty armies into battle. Leadership is something that each individual expresses and demonstrates in their behaviors. And if you act like a leader, if you think like a leader and behave like a leader, you are one. You are one. So let us talk about the qualities of leadership. There have been 3,300 studies done on leadership that I have looked at over the years. Each of them has been an attempt to examine what are the qualities that makes one person an exceptional person. Because when we talk about leaders, we're talking about people who are a cut above the average, as you are. And we know that if you can find out what these people do most of the time and do the same thing, then you keep your A. Right? We stay in the top. So the first quality, number one quality, 3,300 studies, right from the top, the first quality, number one, is vision. We say leadership is the critical factor in the success of any organization. It's also the critical factor in the success of any company, any career, any family. It is leaders have specific vital qualities and perform specific vital functions. And number one is leaders have vision. We find over and over again, leaders can see the future. Leaders have what is called long-time perspective. Now, Dr. Edward Banfield of Harvard University studied this for years, and he was studying success in America. He was studying what he called upward social mobility. In other words, what causes people to rise up through socioeconomic classes over the years. Banfield found that there are seven financial or socioeconomic categories in America. From lower class to upper lower class to lower middle class, upper middle class, lower upper class, and upper upper class. And each one of these have specific characteristics. They have specific values. They have specific likes, dislikes, tastes, levels of education, activities, and so on. And of course, what he found is that if you acted in a manner consistent with one of these levels, you became that. And you did not become that until you did. And he said, what, though, is the attitude that most predicts upward social mobility, that most predicts success in America? And he said the attitude was long-time perspective, is that men and women who rose in their fields were people who thought long-term, and those who did not rise were people who did not. And he found the very act of thinking long-term dramatically increases your likelihood of great success in life. It's the difference between looking at your feet as you walk along and looking at the mountaintop that you're aiming at. So what do we find? We find that leaders have vision. Leaders have a vision of the future. They see the big picture. They look into the distance and they say, what could be? And they have the ability to visualize an ideal future. And this is one of the most important things we found in leaders, is leaders are always idealizing, visualizing, imagining where they want to be in 3 to 5 years. One of the exercises we do in visualization, and I'll just tell you the exercise, you don't have to do it, is we have everybody close their eyes and we say, all right, while your eyes are closed, I want you to imagine that this room, like a room in a spaceship, goes into a time warp. And while your eyes are closed for a few seconds, 5 years pass. And you open your eyes and you're in the same place and your glass of water is at the same level, but 5 years have gone by. Now, something wonderful has happened in that 5 years. And what has happened is that your whole life has been made perfect in every respect. A miracle, magic wand has been waved over every dimension of your life, and your life is now perfect. Every aspect of your life, all your dreams have been fulfilled, all your goals have been achieved. Now here's the question. What would it look like if 5 years from now your life were ideal in every respect? Where would you be in 5 years? Who would you be with? Who would you no longer be with? What would you be doing? How well would you be doing it? How much would you be earning? What level would you be at in your profession? What would be your position? What kind of home would you live in? What kind of car would you drive? What would be your level of physical fitness? What would your family be like in your relationships? How would your children be doing? If your life were perfect in every respect 5 years from now, what would it look like? This is a critical question because I'll tell you two things. Number one is that the 5 years are going to pass. And 5 years from now, there you'll be. The second thing is this, is that if you're absolutely crystal clear about what it would look like if your life were perfect in 5 years, your chances of making that a reality go up by about 1,000%. They just escalate. All successful men and women have a vision of the future. The work that's being done in strategic planning with major corporations today is all revolving around Gary Prahalad's work on what is called strategic intent. And strategic intent says, what is your intent? Where do you want to be in 5 to 10 years? What do you want your company to look like, your life to look like, your products and services to look like? And what kind of a person will you have to be? What kind of a company will you have to have? What kind of core competencies will you have to develop in order to have that life 5 years out? I promise you this, if you can define that clearly today, you develop long-time perspective, which dramatically increases your likelihood of moving up socioeconomically, and you increase your likelihood of getting there by hundreds and hundreds of percent, just by being crystal clear. My favorite word, as you know, and you hear me say it all the time, in terms of success, is clarity, clarity, clarity. The major reason why people move ahead rapidly is they're crystal clear about where they want to go and what it will look like when they get there. And the major reason that people underperform is because of fuzziness. They have no idea. They're like Columbus. You remember Columbus type of people? When he set off for the New World, he didn't know where he was going. And when he got there, he didn't know where he was. And when he got back, he didn't know where he'd been. And this is how most people go to work every day. We call this the Columbus type of salesperson. They don't know where they're going. They don't know where they are. To them, every day is a new adventure. You know, every stop sign is a new adventure. Do I go left? Do I go right? Do I go straight ahead? Who knows? But successful people are like arrows. Think of that Kevin Costner movie, Robin Hood, and that incredible scene with the arrows. Remember that, where the arrow splits the arrow, but you're watching the arrow? Be like that. Be like a person who splits the arrow, who's absolutely so crystal clear about what you want that a person could wake you up at 3 o'clock in the morning and say, Pete, it's not here. Wait, what do you really want in life? You go, boom. You could tell him. You'd know out of a dead sleep. Most people would say, why are you waking me up? I have no idea. Okay. Number A is leaders think about the future. Leaders think about the future. It's one of the characteristics of superior people, by the way, is they spend a lot of time thinking about the future. Average people don't bother. They think about the present. They think about tension-relieving activities rather than goal-achieving. They think about going home and watching television. They think about reading the paper. They think about little petty problems today. Here's an interesting point from Emerson, is you can tell how big you are by the sort of things that irritate you. If you are continually griping and complaining because, you know, the candy on your pillow was a little bit to the right or a little bit to the left, then you've got a pretty small mind. But if the things that bother you are the fact that our governments are far too big and our taxes are far too high and there's far too much corruption in high places and Red China is rearming, I mean, if you're concerned about bigger things in life, then you're a bigger person. You can tell how big you are by the things that preoccupy you. B, what are your values? Critical part of leadership is values. What are your values? What do you stand for? We'll come back to this, by the way, but what do you believe in? You see, leaders have a very interesting characteristic. Leaders know exactly who they are. They know exactly who they are. It's an interesting quality that's come out in recent studies. They know who they are. They know what they stand for and what they believe in. They know what they will not compromise. They know what their values are and the order of priority. And you cannot tell them, well, have you ever thought of doing this or doing that? They know who they are. You don't need to tell them. Non-leaders are very fuzzy. They're not sure. Remember we talked yesterday about self-ideal, your values, your vision, your goals, your aspirations. Leaders are very clear about who they are and what they stand for and where they're going. Non-leaders are kind of, well, maybe to the right, maybe to the left. Maybe yes, maybe no. It's like, you know, for $64,000, sir, are you the kind of person who can make quick decisions? Well, maybe yes, maybe no. A lot of people live their lives, maybe yes, maybe no. So number C, what is your mission? What is your mission for yourself and your life? What is your mission for yourself and your business? Leaders have mission. Mission, by the way, is the galvanizing force in your life. And a mission is an ideal future state. And it's in the present tense. Let me give you an example of a mission. People say, well, companies are supposed to have missions, not people. Nonsense. You're the president of your own company. Therefore, you need a mission for your own life, right? And the more clear your mission is, we have found over and over again, the more clear you are about where you want to be sometime in the future, the much likelier you are to achieve that. So we say a mission. Let us say your mission is I am. You always start off with I am. It's a present tense statement of a desired future condition. I am an outstanding professional in my field. I am admired and respected by everyone with whom I work. I am one of the highest paid and best remunerated people in my profession in the country. I am intensely service-oriented. I am liked and looked up to by everyone with whom I work, and I keep my life in a high level of balance with all the important things in my life in their proper places. There's a good mission. It's a pretty specific mission. But you know what you can do with a mission? You can hold it up and say, how are we doing? And you just keep comparing yourself to your mission. What do we know about leaders? Is leaders set very high standards for themselves. They don't need to have standards imposed on them from the outside. They set very high standards for themselves, and they continually compare themselves against their own standards. Am I living up to the best that is in me? Am I living up to the best that is in me? So you always have to ask yourself, am I living up to the best that is in me? Am I living up to my true mission in life? And your mission is to do something wonderful with your life. Your mission is to do something wonderful with your life. You see, you are extraordinary. I was thinking about this morning, that if you, like a runner, were to run 100%, full blast, for your entire life, you would never come within miles of utilizing your full potential. You'd never come within miles or shouting distance of becoming everything you're capable of becoming. The study in brain research is really interesting, and Stanford here has done a lot of interesting work in it. They say that nature, God, is extraordinarily generous with us and gives us enormous potentials, and all we have to do is use a fraction of them to have an extraordinary life. But the greater men and women just use a smaller, a little fraction more. You don't have to leap buildings with a single bound in order to do extraordinary things. You just have to use a little bit more of what you already have. As I said yesterday, you don't have to be somebody different. You just have to be more of what you already are. And what you already are is extraordinary. Sometimes people say, what kind of a seminar is this? And I say, it's a sales seminar. And it's a sales seminar in this sense, is that my job is to sell you on yourself. And if I'm successful, by the end of the day, you'll have bought. And every single time I'm successful and a person buys, and they walk out and they've bought themselves, they have accepted that they have extraordinary capabilities, and the nickel has dropped and it's locked in, and they've slammed the door on the doubts and fears and maybes and ifs and what ifs and so on. If a person walks out of here sold, their life will be extraordinary. When you walk out of here sold, and we use the word when you walk out of here sold tonight, your life will be extraordinary as well. And there are no limits, except the limits we impose on ourselves, right? Right? So it's very important. Set up a mission. And set up, don't say, well, the other people could do it and you couldn't do it. Of course you could do it. Of course you could do it. Anything anybody else has done, you could do as well. Isn't that right? Anything you can do, I can do better. I can do anything better than you. Right? All right. Number two is courage. Now, of all the research that's been done, courage is number two. And courage means the courage to fulfill the vision. Say, it's one thing to have a great vision of what you'd like to do and a mission and a purpose and values and clarity and everything else. We can all do this. It was Goethe, the German philosopher, who said, you can develop any quality in solitude except character. Character requires the cut and thrust of the world. You can sit in an ivory tower in a little room with the door closed, and you can just be a super person. You can have wonderful qualities, but if you want to be a person of character, you've got to go out into the world where you have to deal with problems that come with hair on top, if you know what I mean. In other words, courage is absolutely essential, because you can have vision in a closed room, but courage is when you go outside and now you have to do something. Now you have to face and risk failure and rejection and loss and disappointment and disapproval and ridicule and embarrassment and poverty and everything else. Now you have to move out of the comfort zone. Now you have to do scary stuff. I'm going to give you a philosophical point that comes from that great American philosopher, Michael Jordan. Yesterday, I said one of the most important principles of all is everything counts. Everything counts. Everything counts. Weak people say, well, it doesn't matter. Superior people say, everything counts. You will find, by the way, the very best people in every field are the ones who are the most fastidious about the details in that field. The very worst people in every field are the ones who are sloppy about the details. The very act of paying attention to details makes you a superior person. The very act of ignoring or sloughing off details moves you down on the ladder of evolution. All your best people are meticulous about details. Simple one-liner, no extra charge. And everything counts. Everything counts. Everything helps or hurts. Everything adds up or takes away. Nothing is neutral. Everything counts. But here's what the great American philosopher Michael Jordan said, just do it. Just do it. This is one of the great rules for success in life. Once you have a goal and a plan and a purpose and a mission and a focus, just do it. The world is full of people, the bottom 90%, who are talkers. They're talkers and procrastinators. They're excuse makers and rationalizers. They're dreamers and deniers, and they live in a world of self-illusion. But the top 10% of people are action-oriented. They just do it. Now, does this mean that top people like yourself are unafraid? No, you're afraid. I'm afraid. We're all afraid. Every one of us is afraid. Nothing wrong with that. Fear goes with the territory. The only question is, do you act in spite of the fear, or do you have the fear overwhelm you? Do you allow the fear to dominate your life, or do you confront the fear and do it anyway? And the answer is, superior people are afraid, but they act anyway. Average people are afraid, and they are paralyzed. They think of all the reasons why it might not work. Two critical ideas that have been helpful to me. Losers always say, I wonder whether it will work. I wonder whether. Winners always say, how? The great word for success is how. When you decide you want something, you want to be happier, healthier, thinner, more prosperous, more successful, the question is not wondering whether it's possible. The only question is how. How can I do it? How can I get from where I am to where I want to go? How? How? That's got to be your mantra. Just do it. Figure out how and just do it. Don't get bogged down in whether. Whether will lead to fear and doubt and paralysis. But how will lead to creativity, stimulation, ideas, insights, help, and a whole lot of other things. So, just do it. Just think in terms of how. How do I get from where I am to where I want to go? And here's another thing between high performers and low performers. Low performers, when they hear something good like this, they say, well, yeah, but what if it doesn't work? But what do high performers say? No, they say, what if it does work? What if it does work? If I say, do this, write this down, try this out, it's based on the experience of hundreds of thousands of millions of people who started with nothing and became successful, and I spent 30 years of my life learning it and testing it and sharing it with over a million people, so therefore there's probably some substance to it. You know, it's not perfect. There's no perfection, but nonetheless, it's worked for so many countless other people, it'll work for you, but still the average person will say, yeah, but what if it doesn't work? The superior person says, what if it does? What if it does, and I can save weeks and months and years of hard work by doing what someone else has taken a lifetime to learn? I can just piggyback. There's a wonderful line from the life of Sir Isaac Newton, who, in a book of the most influential men and women in history, is considered to be the sixth most important person in history. Sir Isaac Newton, in his century, dominated the world of physics, mathematics, light, changed our whole concept of the universe. And at the end of his life, he was asked, of course, by many people, he had been knighted, he had changed the entire world, and they asked him several times, and he gave several different answers, but I love one of his answers. They said, how is it that you could have accomplished so much as a single man? And he said, if I have accomplished anything, you've heard this, if I have accomplished anything in my life, it has not been because I have been so smart. By the way, smart people are never impressed with their own intelligence. Stupid people always are. He said, it's not that I have been so smart. He said, it's because I have stood on the shoulders of giants. Now, this expression now works its way through the modern times, and it's in all of our textbooks. It says, the dwarf that stands on the shoulder of the giant can see further than the giant. Now, the shoulders of the giants are the people who came before, who learned it before. So you don't have to be a giant to see further than a giant. You can be a dwarf, just stand on the shoulders of giants. The smartest of all people are the ones who learn from others. I met a gentleman some years ago named Kopp Kopmeier who spent 54 years studying success. And I had read all his books and listened to all his tapes. And I met him and I asked him, of all these 1,000 principles that you've derived over an entire lifetime, advisor to 6 presidents, what are the most important? And you know, he said, his most important principle, he said it without hesitation. It was like breathing in, breathing out. He said, learn from the experts. He said, you'll never live long enough to learn it all by yourself. Learn from those who've gone before you. Exactly what Sir Isaac Newton said, stand on the shoulders of giants. And constantly ask yourself, what if it works? What if it works? These other people made it work, hundreds of thousands of millions of them. What if I made it work for myself as well? And then once you've decided that, then the expression is what? It's just do it. Just do it. That's the mark of the superior person. They just do it. Okay, now here's the keys to courage. A, the future belongs to the risk takers. The future doesn't belong to the comfort seekers. It doesn't belong to the fearful people who, you know, crouch around and crawl around and take what's left. The future belongs to people who move boldly out of the comfort zone. And B, boldness is really the quality. Boldness means the willingness to initiate action with no guarantee of results. The willingness to initiate action with no guarantee of results. There's a basic rule that successful people are not those who necessarily make the right decisions, but they make their decisions right. You see, I could talk about this all day, but there is a principle that says that when you launch like a missile towards your goal, you will start to get feedback at a rapid rate, and the feedback will enable you to change your course. But if you take the most sophisticated missile in the world, a missile that can hit a target no matter where it goes once it's fired, that can take feedback through its guidance mechanism, the most sophisticated missile in the world cannot adjust course until it's in flight. And that's the key to understand, that you cannot adjust course, you can't get better, you can't get feedback, you can't learn, you can't improve unless you're in flight. So just do it. Launch. Project towards your goal and say, don't worry. Someone once said that if every possible objection must first be answered, if every possible obstacle must first be overcome before acting, nothing will ever get done. Be clear about what you want and then launch. And it's absolutely amazing. Emerson said, with regard to boldness, he said, do the thing and you will have the power. Act boldly and unseen forces will come to your aid. Act boldly. In the Starship Enterprise series, Star Trek, remember? Remember that wonderful line that it opens up with all the time? The Starship Enterprise is designed, what? To go boldly where no one has ever gone before. That's what your life must be, to go boldly where no one has ever gone before. And what will happen is the most incredible things. If you move out of the comfort zone, you will learn at a rate that you've never believed possible. You will learn so fast that you will learn what you need to do to be successful. But if you sit in the comfort zone, you never will. So the third quality of leaders is integrity. Now, integrity could probably be put as number one. Integrity is the most desired and respected quality of leadership. It is so important. And by the way, these qualities are not, maybe I'll take this, maybe I'll take that. This is not a smorgasbord where you can take some and leave the others. All of these qualities, 7 of them, are essential for leadership. If you lack any one, you have no hope. If you lack any one, basically, you're sabotaged. But if you have each of these to a high degree, you become an extraordinary person. Now, integrity, in many cases, is the most important of all. When I was doing some work with a major corporation, the president said to me, after we had laid up the values for the company on the board, we voted, and they all voted that integrity was number one. That would be the most important organizing principle for this company. And then he mentioned, and he was a very smart man, one of the smartest people in the country, and one of the wealthiest. He said, Brian, he said, Texas. Brian, he said, it's interesting about this quality integrity. He said, as I said, he said, integrity is not a quality by itself. He said, it's the quality that guarantees all the other qualities. Smart, huh? Isn't that a great insight? Integrity is the quality that guarantees the other qualities. Because you can say, I have vision and courage, but integrity means that you do. It means that this is not theoretical. So integrity is the most important of all. Today, in our world, we have a lot of problems with what are called situational ethics. Situational ethics are where people have ethics depending upon whether or not it's convenient or anybody's watching. But as we said yesterday, superior people are those who set high standards for themselves even when nobody is watching. Someone once said that if honesty did not exist, and that's probably the extension of integrity, if honesty did not exist, it would have to be invented as the surest way of getting rich. Now, I have some theories with regard to integrity, not theories. No, theories are potential. These are fixed beliefs. One of them has to do with business. And in America today, they have looked at commercial television and have found a most remarkable thing. 84% of all villains depicted on commercial television, now in most movies, miniseries, and so on, are white-collar business people. 84% of all liars, cheats, crooks, murderers, thieves, polluters, and everything else, 84% are white-collar business people. Why is that? Well, they've asked them, why do you do this? This is the only group in America we can pick on without being accused of prejudice or discrimination. They simply lay back and take it. You know, and we cannot talk about any racial group, any ethnic group, any religious group, or anything else without there being a furor. So therefore, there's only one group left, that's white-collar business people. And now they say, well, and you know, they started to complain, well, there's too many businessmen being projected as villains, not enough women. It's not fair. So now what do you have? Is you have women being projected as liars, killers, thieves, cheats, murderers, swindlers, connivers, dope pushers, and everything else. Isn't that right? It's sort of, you know, equality. It's politically correct. And yet, if you actually look at FBI arrest statistics, what do you find? Less than 1% of all arrests in America are business people. Less than 1%. And of those, a tiny, 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 minuscule fraction is women. Because women have, you know, far higher qualities, characteristics, ethics, values, intelligence than men. Most cases, right? All right. But can you imagine? In your whole life, I mean, you've probably, if you're a man, you've probably had experience with women who are different. But can you imagine them lying, cheating, conniving, killing, murdering, swindling, pushing dope, drugs, hit people and everything else? Can you imagine hit women? I mean, it's so bizarre. It's almost like adult comic books. The point that I'm making is this. I've heard people say, and it infuriates me, especially young people coming out of college, well, I want to be successful in business, but I don't want to have to do the kind of things that you have to do to be successful in business. I will tell you this. The fundamental glue of all relationships is what? Trust. The fundamental glue that holds business together is absolute impeccable integrity and trust. And business people, in my estimation, who are successful are some of the finest, most honest, most decent, most straightforward, trustworthy people that you'll ever meet. You'll get swindled by all kinds of people, but not business people, because all of successful business is a progression from starting off with nothing and growing. And you grow in terms of the people that you meet and know and the relationships you form and develop. And every one of those is built on trust. So a person who is successful is usually a person who has established a network of trust that expands in all directions. So if anybody ever says, well, I want to be successful in business, but I don't want to do the things that business people have to do. Business people have to be impeccably honest in order to survive because there is no room. Why? What is the fundamental element? It's an S with two strokes over it that we deal with in business. S, two strokes. Come on. It's money, of course. And so therefore, are people sensitive about their money? And that's why trust is absolutely essential, absolutely indispensable. If you can develop and maintain high levels of integrity and trust and respect and esteem of your fellow man, your world belongs to you. That's why if an honesty did not exist, it would have to be invented as the surest way of getting rich. Here's the rule. Never, 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 never compromise your integrity or your honesty for anything. No amount of money. Would you steal? No, I wouldn't steal. What if you get away with it? How much? It's absolutely amazing. I mean, people don't realize that integrity is sort of like being pregnant. Either you are or you aren't. You don't have a little bit of integrity. I mean, you'd say, well, I have integrity just as long as nobody's looking. Okay, so here's the first. A is the reality principle. Now, the reality principle is what Jack Welch, and he learned this from Peter Drucker, considers to be the most important single principle of leadership. article in Fortune magazine a couple of years ago of seven principles of leadership for Jack Welch, the head and CEO of GE. He said the reality principle is number one. In every single case, the only question he asks to start off with is, what's the reality here? What's the truth? What's the reality? What is your reality? The reality principle says you must be perfectly realistic, and the way Welch describes it and the way Drucker describes it is, see the world as it is, not as you wish it would be or could be. See the world as it is. Look at it honestly. In psychology today, we have two major phenomena that leads to almost all mental illness. Phenomena number one is the phenomena of denial, is we refuse to see the world the way it is. We refuse to see our relationships the way they are. Especially we refuse to see ourselves the way we really are. We engage in denial, and then denial leads quickly to self-delusion. When Maslow did his studies on self-actualizing men and women, superior men and women like yourself, he found that one quality that they had was they were incredibly objective toward themselves. They did not fool themselves or play games with their own heads. They looked at themselves in the mirror, as Cromwell once said, warts and all. Famous story when Oliver Cromwell was being painted by a court painter. He had big warts on his nose. And the painter had painted him without the warts. And he came back and he looked at the paint and he said, paint it warts and all. He said, I want this to be a perfectly honest depiction of who I really am. So that painting now hangs in the Royal Galleries with the warts on his nose, where his friends and compeers had all of the blemishes, you know, ironed out in the painting. Well, it's the same with you and I. Face the world the way it is. A person who can admit their weaknesses, by the way, is a strong person. A person who can't is a weak person. A person who can say, I'm not perfect, is a much better person than a person who's always trying to maintain an illusion. So therefore, be willing to admit that you're weak. Is it possible to grow if you don't admit where you have areas where you need to grow in? The reason that people don't grow is they won't face the fact that they're weak in some areas. But if you face the fact that you're not perfect, that makes you a superior person. I'll tell you something else, by the way, about honesty and objectivity. Strong people have far more weaknesses than strengths. Strong people have far more weaknesses than strengths. As you are all strong in certain areas, but you have far more weaknesses than you have strengths. Nothing wrong with that. Someone says, well, you're not very good at mathematics. Nope, so what? You don't have to defend or explain or anything else. You say, well, I could if I wanted to. No, that's not my area of strength. Remember, if you maximized and worked on your areas of strength for your whole life, you'd never achieve everything that's possible for you. How can you possibly spend time working on the areas where you don't have any strength or interest at all? So, denial and self-delusion means not facing the world and not facing ourselves the way we are. Be objective. Be honest with yourself. Face the facts. If somebody tells you that you're this or that or the other thing, consider it openly and honestly. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not. Now, second B is truthfulness. And truthfulness is very important. You know, I've told you about my children, and I'm very proud of my children. I love my children. We all love our children, but I know that I can't do everything for my children. I cannot teach them everything. I would love to sit down and lecture to them day after day and tell them how to be successful and good and everything else. So I've decided many years ago I would focus on one thing, and it was truthfulness. And so I've told my children, always tell the truth. Always tell the truth. No matter what, always tell the truth. I read a line many years ago in studying child raising, and by the way, if you raise children and you don't study how to raise children, you should start, because raising children is one of the most complicated and the most important thing that is done in our society. All of our society depends upon how well children are raised. That's why mothers are the most important people in our society. Anything you do in business comes and goes and becomes irrelevant, but raising children lasts for decades, if not for generations, my opinion. Anyway, I focus on my children. I read this little one-liner. It said, if your children lie, who has made them afraid to tell the truth? Ooh, wow. I said, that's it. That's it, baby. I've got religion now. I went to my children. I said, listen, you must always tell me the truth. No matter what, tell me the truth. I promise you this, you'll never get in trouble for telling the truth. You will never have to be afraid to tell the truth. Because if you're afraid to tell the truth and you lie, the lying will become a habit. Pretty soon you won't know when you're telling the truth or lying or half-truth or half-lying. It's very important that you tell the truth. And I've had to drum this in over and over and over again. Takes kids a long time to learn this. When kids are young, they lie. If you have young children under the age of 10 or 12, they lie. It's not that it's honest. There's nothing wrong with them. Lying is just a conversational gambit. I caught my son Michael in a lie when he was 10 years old. I said, Michael, that's a barefaced lie. How could you say that? He said, I just thought I'd give it a shot. It's true. In other words, they don't think anything of it. It's just a shot. Give it a shot. If it works, do more of it. If it doesn't work, try something else. Now, that's okay when you're young because you're learning how to get along in the world. It's not okay when you get older. So I explain to them, and I lecture to them, and I talk to them, and I hold their hands, and I counsel, and I, you know, love and hug and care and share, and I say, whatever you do, tell me the truth. Tell your mother the truth. Tell us the truth. You'll never get in trouble for telling the truth. And now we've got Christina, who's 17, and she is so meticulous, she cannot not tell the truth. She cannot dissemble. She cannot even fake things. She cannot be phony. And surprise, surprise, this is a young woman who is confident and strong and outgoing and popular and liked and respected by all her friends. And you know what her friends say to her? Geez, I wish I could tell my parents the truth the way you do. I wish I could be so straight with my parents, but I have to lie to them all the time because I don't know how they'll react. Her friends look up to her and wish they could tell the truth, and her friends are often in a lot of trouble. Too much drugs, too much promiscuous sex, too much alcohol, too much all kinds of stuff. They can't tell their parents the truth. Christina can always tell us the truth. And whatever it is, we talk about it. Whatever it is, she never gets in trouble. Now I've got Michael. He's 14, and I've got him over the hump. Tough going. Boys are dreadful. Boys are cursed with what is called testosterone poisoning. And Michael went through this really bad period where he wasn't sure whether his loyalties were to his friends or his peers, and back and forth and half-truths and everything else. And I finally just beat him down psychologically, not physically, until finally he tells the truth. And finally, I say, Michael, don't do this. And later on, I pick him up. I say, what did you do tonight? He said, well, I did that. I said, okay. That's fine. Number four is commitment. Leaders have very, very high levels of commitment. Leaders have very high levels of commitment. They don't take any prisoners. They're totally in there. They don't pussyfoot in the game of life. The leader is completely dedicated to the success of the organization. They didn't tell General Schwarzkopf, General Schwarzkopf, go over to that gulf and, you know, give it your best shot. Counter-react to what Saddam Hussein is doing. They picked Schwarzkopf. They said, if you put this man in command, he will come back with a victory. And they sent him over there and they said, go over there and win. He said, good. He said, use your own best discretion. He said, we'll stay out of your way. We'll not try to second guess you, but you win. So for 6 months after they had promised him this, they kept urging him, attack, 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 attack. Come on, attack. We're really getting a beating up in the press. He said, I'm not ready yet. I'm not ready yet. I'll attack when I'm ready. Come on, attack, 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 attack. I'm not ready. And they kept saying to Bush and to Powell, how come he's not attacking? Well, they said, we have decided to leave the commander in place in charge of the operation. We will not second guess the commander on the ground. And so, come on, and they're predicting all these terrible things and so on. He said, no. He said, my goal is low body count. He said, if we are going to fight this battle, I want the lowest number of casualties amongst Americans. It's very important because it's so politically sensitive. So he spent 6 months planning, and in 100 hours, the second largest army in the world defeated the fourth largest army in the world. The greatest military defeat or reversal in the history of man in 100 hours with a casualty rate so low as to be unbelievable. They said what Schwarzkopf has done is really made it hard for the next general in the next war. how do you compete with that? You put in 330,000 men against a 500,000 person army and win in 100 hours. I mean, it's 4 days. With such a low casualty rate as to be unbelievable. The commitment was to victory. The commitment is to winning. Don't do it unless you're going to do it wholeheartedly. So here are the rules with commitment. Commitment is the catalyst that activates and energizes the internal and external resources of the organization. It's the catalyst, like a chemical catalyst that causes, boom, everything to come to place. That's why whenever an organization is in trouble, they bring in a new leader. Many organizations have people in charge who are most concerned with not winning. Or often they're concerned about their perks and their privileges. But when you need to change an organization around, you bring in a Vince Lombardi. You bring in a General Patton. You put them in charge and say, go for it. And they go in there and they have only one thought, that's to win. And they're totally committed to victory. And B is the leader must be passionate about the importance of the results aimed at. I've done a lot of work on entrepreneurship and business startups, also business turnarounds and business successes and failures. And here's one of the interesting observations, and I write it in red, is that the leader must fall in love with the result, must fall in love with success. If you're going to start a new business, I will tell you this. The key to getting into a new business, and people ask me this all the time, is what business should I get into? I will tell you what it is, a business you're passionate about. A product or service you're passionate about, you love it. It's so important to you, you cannot stop thinking about it or talking about it. You love to use it and to sell it to your mother, your father, your sister, your brother. Good test. Can you sell it to your mother? Can you sell it to your brother? Can you sell it to your best friend? Can you sell it to your coworkers? Can you talk about it so confidently and passionately to anybody? If you feel reluctant or uneasy or tense talking about it to the people that you know closely, I can guarantee you, you'll never be successful selling it to people you don't know at all. Many people get into businesses, by the way, because they think they're going to make a lot of money. That is exactly the wrong reason for getting into a business, because you will fail. You must get into a business of any kind, first income, second income, whatever it happens to be, because you love it. You're in love with the business. You love the products. Whoa! I mean, you are on fire with it. Because if you only do it for the money, what we have found is that as soon as you hit the wall, which you will collapse. You will not have enough energy to stick to it when things get rough. But if you love it, you will keep going and keep going and keep going. You'll be like the Energizer Bunny. You'll just keep going and going and going. So it's very important that you have that commitment. I was on the plane with a very nice Jewish woman from New York coming back to San Diego. Very smart woman, real estate, wealthy. And we're talking about homes. She had a home not far from where we lived. And we're talking about the homes that we looked at. And we finally decided on this home. And it was the only home that we looked at out of 150 that we would have bought. And she said, honey, she said, it grabbed you, didn't it? It grabbed you. Never buy a house if it doesn't grab you the first time you walk in the door. She said, that's the key. It's got to grab you. And I always remember that expression. If it's right for you, it grabs you. If the person is right for you, by the way, there is an instant connection, a catalytic reaction the instant you meet them the first time. And if the job is right for you, company's right for you, business opportunity is right for you, it grabs you. You love it. It just holds on to you. It's almost like digs into you. And if it doesn't, let it pass. Rule for success, never attempt to do anything that your heart isn't in. Now, if your best friend brings you the most fantastic business opportunity in the world and you look at it and it doesn't grab you, pass it by. Pass it by. Because you won't be successful unless your whole heart is in it. All successful men and women have high levels of commitment to what they're doing. And unsuccessful men and women are going through the motions because, okay, number five is responsible. This is very important. It's one of the two or three most important qualities of exceptional people is they're highly responsible. Is the leader accepts complete responsibility for the activities and results of the organization. The leader never passes the buck. The leader says, if it's to be, it's up to me. In fact, the leader says, and here are the words, I am responsible. I am responsible. The leader doesn't get mad. The leader gets even. The leader doesn't get angry or upset. The leader gets going. While some people are making excuses, leaders are making progress. The leaders say, I am responsible. If there's a problem, I am responsible. A, no excuses, no blaming. As Harry Truman once said, the buck stops here. If you want an answer, bring it to me. We don't pass it on to someone else. So no excuses, no blaming, no criticizing. Criticizing is trying to put somebody else in charge, trying to make someone else the go. No bad mouthing. As a matter of fact, if you want to give yourself an exercise for the next 24 hours, refuse to make excuses, blame anyone, criticize, or badmouth. See if you can do that for 24 hours. See if you can do it for 24 minutes. Of course, it's going to wipe out your conversation for a while because you won't have much to talk about. But you know what successful people do? I'll tell you what. They think and talk about what they want. And you know what unsuccessful people do? They think and talk about what they don't want. And you know what successful people get? More and more of what they want. And you know what unsuccessful people get? More and more of what they don't want, and they can't figure it out. Golly, how come my life sucks? It's because you suck, sir. That's why. You know. You know, there's an old saying, I'm a self-made man. But if I had to do it over again, I'd call in a little extra help. The fact is, we're all self-made. And we make ourselves, and we continue making ourselves in the process of creation by the way we think about ourselves and our lives. And if we want to change our life on the outside, we go to work to change our life on the inside. But we're where we are and what we are because of our own thoughts. If we're not happy, start changing our own thoughts. Thoughts always precede actions. First we think, then we act. So therefore, if we want to act differently and get different results, we start to think differently first. Now, it's a hard thing to do. Hardest thing of all is to change your thoughts. But here's the great breakthrough is what is the only one thing in the entire world over which you have any control? Is your thinking. No matter what anybody else does in the whole world, you can choose your own thinking. Viktor Frankl, in his book, Man's Search for Meaning, said the last great freedom of mankind is the freedom to choose your attitude under any given set of external conditions. You have the freedom to choose your attitude. And in that, you choose everything else. B is never complain, never explain. You know, Robert Hughes wrote a book a couple of years ago called The Culture of Complaint. And basically what it says is that America is like a mass of complaints. Complaints, complaints, complaints. Everybody is complaining. Complain, complain, complain. Well, what you do, and you'll find this, by the way, if you're not careful, you get up in the morning, you complain for the whole day. Hi, how are you doing? Well, all right, my back hurts. You know, the air conditioning doesn't work that well. Light's not too good. My pen doesn't work. I couldn't get in for breakfast, and room service was slow. How about you? Oh, I could beat that. I had all those. Plus, I couldn't get my laundry and everything else. So we go, wah, 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 wah. It's called Ain't It Awful. Let's play Ain't It Awful. So we play Ain't It Awful hour after hour. So for the rest of the day, I'm going to give you an exercise. Just think and talk about the things you want. And the things we talk about here, and refuse to think or talk about what you don't want. In your conversations, if you find yourself saying anything negative or complaining, stop and say, wait a minute, just for today, I'm only going to think and talk about what I want. I'm not going to think and talk about what I don't want. Very simple. Try it. See how tough you are. See what you're made of. See if you've got gravel in your guts or just marshmallow. See if you're tough. Can you talk about what you want and not talk about what you don't want? Let's see. Huh? If I could have $100 from every one of you, if you couldn't do it, I'd win. Because many of you are sitting there thinking, well, I couldn't do that. I wouldn't have anything to talk about. Ah, gotcha. Gotcha. Even thinking about it causes you to think about not thinking about it. I mean, unbelievable. Number six is concentration. Now, concentration is really the mark of the truly superior person. If there is one key for success in life is the ability to concentrate single-mindedly on one thing at a time. It is so important, it's overwhelmingly important. I'm working on a book on this now, just the single book on concentration. Because if a person can learn habitually and systematically to concentrate on the most important thing, they can conquer the world. And if they can't, they'll always have to work for someone else who can and will supervise them. So, concentration is the ability to focus critical energies on the most vital results required. This is numero uno. If you have all the other skills in the world, but you cannot concentrate them like a laser beam, then to that degree, they are ineffective. A, leaders focus on the needs of the situation. Average people start off with their own personal needs. Superior people start off with, what does the situation need of me? My little girl runs and she falls down and she hurts her knee. She scrapes her knee. And does she need for me to say, now, from now on, you be careful. You walk, pick up your feet, and I've told you all these years, don't you run or you'll fall down and so on when she's crying and she's got a scraped knee. No, what she needs is to be picked up and held and loved and kissed and have her knee cleaned off and everything else. And later on, maybe she needs some advice. But right now, what she needs is something different. In every situation, the superior person stands back and says, what does this situation need of me? And then they focus on the needs of their situation. The average person, the mediocre person, is always focused on what do I need? What do I want? Me. Ah, shut up. What does the situation need? The leader always starts with the needs of the situation. B is leaders set clear priorities on the expenditure of resources. Since resources are always limited, the leader always has to be choosing. Now, what is the critical resource that you have to make decisions on? What's the critical resource that you as an individual have? Time, absolutely. Most precious of all resources. So leaders are very, very fastidious and good about setting priorities on the use of time. Non-leaders are not. Non-leaders try to do everything at once and end up doing nothing particularly well. Leaders concentrate on one or two things that make all the difference, and they concentrate on doing it very well. So that's very important. C is leaders focus on strengths. This is one of the most important things you do. They focus on strengths in themselves, strengths in the situation, strengths in their own ability, strengths in other people. What do non-leaders focus on and talk about? Weaknesses. The fact of the matter is that strong people have far more weaknesses than strengths. You have remarkable strengths. You have a couple of strengths that are so powerful they're scary. In fact, if anybody knew how good you were, you'd probably have to be licensed to the local police department. You have strengths that are uncanny, but strengths are like gold. You've got to get them out of the ground in order to use them. What are your strengths? What is your greatest strength? What is your greatest ability? What is the one thing that you are uniquely equipped by nature to do in an extraordinary fashion that can really make a difference in your world and in the lives of other people? Remember, a strength in and of itself is like something in the basement. It has no great advantage. A strength is only relative to how you can use it to help other people, to do something that enriches and uplifts the lives of others. What strengths do you have that make it uniquely possible for you to make a real difference in your world? The ability to ask and answer that question accurately can change your whole future. And by the way, before today is over, you'll have had a chance to more accurately assess that, I promise you. So number 7 is excellence. And excellence is really important. Excellence means leaders are committed to excellent performance of the business task. And that means no compromise, no prisoners, no compromise. Peter Drucker has studied the excellent executive, and he's done studies for 50 years, and he finds that excellent executives, and it's interesting, if I were to say how many people here are executives, what would you say? Of course, we all are executives. Do you know what the definition of an executive is? An executive is a person who is responsible for results, for getting something done. So by that definition, we're all executives. So he said, what is the quality of the effective executive? He said he has worked with them in every type of company, fat and thin, tall and short, every racial, ethnic, religious group in the world, educated, well-educated, extroverted, introverted. They all have one quality, is they're absolutely ruthless about excellent work. They're absolutely ruthless. They're absolutely demanding. They are absolutely uncompromising when it comes to doing the job well. Remember I said a minute ago that all excellent people are fastidious about details? Well, you cannot possibly be excellent without being fastidious about details, and you can't be fastidious about details without doing it vastly better than the average. So the two go hand in hand. Superior people do not compromise in terms of quality. They will take no prisoners. And average people are always saying, that's good enough. Malcolm Forbes had a little one-liner some years ago. He wrote, good enough seldom is. And remember that, good enough seldom is. When a person says that's good enough, you know that you're working with a mediocre person. Good enough seldom is. I worked with a company once, and I worked with them, and I spent tens of thousands of dollars with them, and I discontinued my working with them and never worked with them again when I heard one of them say, it was reported to me, not even in my earshot, that's good enough for this project. Now, it wasn't good enough. But that's good enough was the attitude of poison that literally destroyed that business relationship and destroyed that person's career and company. The attitude that that's good enough is fatal. Don't ever allow it. It's never good enough. It's never good enough. And if it's good enough for today, that was yesterday, that's today. Tomorrow it has to be infinitely better. A, leadership is the ability to choose the area of excellence. Since you can't do everything in an excellent fashion, because of the limit of time and resources, you must decide which things you are going to do in an excellent fashion and focus on those. B, leaders focus on and develop essential core competencies. A core competency is an essential skill that you have to do your job in an excellent fashion. What one or more core competencies do you need to excel in your field? And then the question is not whether or not you develop those core competencies. The question is, how do I develop the core competence? But it'll take me a week, it'll take me a month, it'll take me a year, it'll take me 5 years. I'll be 5 years older by the time I get good in that area. Well, sir, how old are you going to be in 5 years in any case? The fact of the matter, time is going to pass. Time is going to pass, And you might as well, with the passing of time, become outstanding at what you do. And remember, anything that anyone else has done, you can do as well. If somebody else is in the top 10%, I'm not saying that you have to be in the number one person in your field, just the top 10%. That's pretty wide range, isn't it? That's several hundred or several thousand people. You can get there. Isn't that true? Say yes.
Yes.
It's very important. Buy it. Buy it. If you believe that you can do it and you walk out and do it. I've met several people here yesterday who told me they did that. They made the decision to be one of the best in their field and their whole careers turned around. Within a year or two, they were. And they found the only thing keeping them out of the top 10% was themselves. They hadn't decided to be in the top 10%. If you haven't decided to be in the top 10%, it's like driving past a movie theater and never deciding to go in. Geez, I'd like to see that picture. Boy, it looks like a good picture. Doggone, that's a good picture. Hey, it's mentioned in the newspaper. It's reviewed over here. Golly, that's a good picture. Go to the picture, you idiot. Stop talking about it. Go to the movie. Buy a ticket. You know, go in. All right. And C is leaders elicit extraordinary performance from ordinary people. Now, here's a question. Everybody here is dependent for their success on eliciting extraordinary performance from others, on leadership, bringing out the best in your children, bringing out the best in your staff, bringing out the best in your downlines, bringing out the best in others, and so on. How is it that leaders get this extraordinary performance out of other people? Can you guess? Be the leader you're looking for. They do it by they set an example. They don't say, go ahead and do it well. They say, follow me. As Dwight Eisenhower said, he was asked, why is it the top battlefield commanders always lead their men into action? He said, did you ever try to push a string? The most important thing that you do, and Peter's work on this is extensive. Peter was speaking here yesterday, by the way, smaller audience than this. And not as good information, old stuff. Anyway, the point is that Peter's even made this example. He said the number one thing that a leader can do is be an example. Be the kind of person that if everybody looked at you and did what you do, you'd have an extraordinary organization. They set an example in everything they do, in everything they say, in every act and every gesture toward other people. They are examples. You be the kind of person you want your people to be. You walk the talk. You act every minute of every day like an exemplary person. And surprise, surprise, people will rise to that. People rise to leadership. Leadership means that you're the kind of person that people want to be and want to work for and want to work under because you are an exemplary person. So the better you become in yourself, the better all the people around you become as well. Does this make sense?
Yes.
We always ask this question, then we'll take this break. The question is, and it's a four-part question, and it is always ask yourself every day in terms of setting an example of being the best you can be. You say, what kind of a world would my world be if everybody in it were just like me? And if the answer is, this would be a great world if everybody in it was just like me, then you're doing well. But the honest answer is, well, maybe there are some corners I could take off or some wrinkles I could get out of my bed sheets. In other words, there are areas for us to work. Then the second question is, what kind of a country would my country be if everyone in it were just like me? What kind of a country would America be if everyone in it was just like me? And then the third question, and by the way, the answer to that is, well, there's probably a few things we could do here too. You see, honest people are inordinately sensitive to their own shortcomings. Dishonest people ignore them, deny them, cover them up, pretend they don't exist. The third question is, what kind of a company would my company be if everyone in it was just like me? And then ask yourself, are there things you could do differently or better? And then the final question is pretty simple, is what kind of a family would my family be if everyone in it was just like me? And if you can say over time that if everybody was just like me in each of those areas, they would be a much better world, much better country, much better company, and much better family, then you know that you're becoming one of the best people in the business, right?
This is the end of this disc. The program continues on the next CD.